Nathan Fraser Show, episode number 75. What is copywriting? All right, let's do this.
Government is inefficient and should be dissolved.
What government should actually do is just leave people alone to buy and sell freely among themselves. If they just leave self-interested traders to compete with one another, markets are guided to positive outcomes as if by an invisible hand.
It's free markets that are moral because you only succeed if you meet the needs and wants of other people.
One of the hard things for people to understand is that the more you try to control an economy, the more quickly it falls apart.
Capitalism, God's way of determining who is smart and who is poor.
What is up, a free market squad in the place to be? Thank you for taking a half hour out of your week to hang with me. Maybe more than a half hour. We'll have to see. It's your boy, Nathan Fraser. I am the host with a hero complex, the high priest of propaganda. And this is the Nathan Fraser Show. You, more importantly, you are the free market squad. And again, thank you for chilling with me this lovely day, evening, middle of the morning. I have no idea when you're listening to this. This week, we're going to be talking about what is copywriting. It's a question that I get way too frequently. And it's something that I think that if you understand it, if you understand the principles of writing good sales copy, it can improve so many other areas of your life. It can make you a better activist for the ideals that you're trying to sell. It can make you a better salesperson for whatever product or service you're trying to sell. It can make you a better communicator. It can make you have better relationships. So there's so many benefits to understanding how good sales copy works that I wanted to do this episode and just kind of put it out there what it is. And this episode is actually a supplemental episode. It comes from a discussion that I had or a talk that I had on Chris Stefanik's Choice Conversations podcast, but it was such a good episode that I wanted to repurpose it. I've slimmed it down a little bit from what appeared on Chris's episode, but I wanted to get some of the meat and the potatoes from this talk and present it to you, the free market squad. So this week's episode is going to be just that. It's going to be excerpts from the episode of Choice Conversations where I just did a deep dive into what is copywriting. So without any further ado, I'm just going to jump into it and here we go. What is copywriting? Well, first of all, I'm going to cover what copywriting is not. It is not anything related to or anything to do with intellectual property. That's what I always get. People say, well, you do copywriting. Can you help me copyright this song? Or can you help me copyright my book? That is not what I do. It's a completely different copyright. That is copy, R-I-G-H-T, where the government grants you a monopoly on using your intellectual property, quote unquote. This is copywriting with a W-R-I-T-I-N-G, so copywriting. And there's no little C with a circle around it involved. This does not protect your intellectual property from being copied. Like I said, this is a completely different type of copywriting. So, and to be honest, I'm not a big fan of intellectual property anyways. So that's not what we're going to be talking about today. This is not Stephen Kinsella. This is Nathan Fraser. So what is copywriting? Copywriting is basically persuasive writing, commonly in the form of sales messages. Realistically and at its core, copywriting is salesmanship in print. That's what I do. I write sales messages for people and for businesses. I've been doing it for a little bit over 3 years now, and at least at the time of this recording, and I'm pretty decent at it if I do say so myself. But today we're going to be talking about the rules of copywriting. And they don't just apply to sales letters. The reason why I wanted to go over this is because the rules of copywriting can be applied to emails, to blog posts, even to Facebook updates. In fact, a lot of my Facebook updates get hundreds of likes. They get double-digit shares. Even my most blatant sales pitches, which Facebook is not very friendly with sales pitches, but I write almost consistently. I'm writing at least every day. I'm taking one of my email marketing newsletters or just pushing people to do stuff all the time. I get so much leverage out of Facebook. And even my blatant sales pitches on Facebook get way more engagement than most people's regular posts do. So understanding the rules of copywriting can be applied to a lot more than just sales messages. And so I'm going to kind of go over what those rules are today, and hopefully you'll be able, whether you're in sales, whether you've got a product or a service or a business that you're trying to grow or not, everybody's communicating, and understanding the rules of copywriting can help you be a more effective communicator. So no matter what, and the fact of the matter is everybody's in sales. I probably should have qualified that. I said, whether you're in sales or not, everybody's in sales. Whether it's I've got a service or a product to sell, or it's I've got this idea that I want to sell you on, I want you to buy into my way of thinking. Even something so insignificant as I want to convince you that we should go to dinner here tonight rather than over here, or I want to convince you that we should go and see this movie instead of going to do this activity tonight or on date night or whatever the case may be, or even so much as that. I want to convince this girl that I am somebody who would be a qualified. That sounds so nerdy, a qualified partner for her. Anyways, everybody's in sales. If you're communicating at all, you're more than likely trying to persuade somebody of something, and understanding copywriting and understanding the rules of great copy can make you a more effective persuader, make you more persuasive. So the reason that Chris invited me on is because copywriting is about conversation. In fact, one of the most well-known sayings about copywriting, one of the most well-known rules for copywriting, is enter the conversation that's already going on in your prospect's head. So copywriting is all about engaging, entering, and taking control of that conversation. And much like this podcast, which is going to be a one-way conversation, it's not going to be Chris and myself talking back and forth. It's going to be me talking directly to you. And this will be a one-way conversation, just like copywriting is a one-way sales conversation. And a one-way conversation is, it's very hard to persuade. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where you were in a one-sided conversation where you weren't able to get a word in edgewise. But if you have, you already know how difficult it is to have a one-way conversation, and how difficult it is to persuade somebody of something when they don't, or how difficult it is for somebody else to persuade you of something when they don't even let you get a word in. So that's one of the things that a copywriter has working against them and has to be able to overcome. And so throughout this podcast, I'm going to teach you some of the ways that we overcome that major disability. So unlike regular writing, copywriting has its own set of rules, its own set of editing guidelines. Copywriting is about engaging the reader. It's about conversing with them, getting them to agree with you without ever giving them the chance to chime in, and fully aware of the fact that they're able to get up and walk away from the conversation at any time. At any time during the conversation of copywriting, they can click close on the window, they can shut the book, they can shut the newspaper, they can walk away from the ad, and you've lost them. So copywriting has huge disadvantages, and the point is to take the person from, hey, nice to meet you, to, hey, would you please do whatever this thing is that I want you to do? And you've got everything stacked against you from the very beginning, and you have to get to that very end point. And that's what copywriting is all about. It's an art form. And if you can master it, you can become more persuasive. You can have way better conversations with people than you do now. So if that sounds interesting to you, make sure that you stay tuned. I'm going to be getting into all of that as the podcast goes on. And actually, before I do, though, I want to lay out a couple things, or maybe one thing in particular. Notice that I said persuasion and not manipulation. Persuasion is about bringing somebody to a choice that they will later rejoice in. And manipulation is about bringing somebody to a choice that they will later regret. As a capitalist, I believe in free market trade. I believe that a trade should be a a situation where both parties leave feeling like they got more than they went into the transaction with. I think that both parties should leave feeling enriched. And so as a marketer and as a copywriter, that's my goal. My goal is to help somebody who is on the fence about buying something. And if it's something that will actually improve their life, I want to gently nudge them into making that buying decision. But as a marketer, as a copywriter, I know how easily these skills can be used for evil. So I'm going to be laying them out there, and I'm going to just trust that you use them responsibly. So let's go ahead and just jump right into it. And I'm going to go over 5 of my basic copy editing rules, 5 things that basically are checkpoints for me that I make sure that I try to do in every single sales message. And the very first one that we're going to start with is the headline. Now, headlines are the big, bold, attention-grabbing things on a blog post, on a sales letter, on a sales, on an advertisement, any kind of sales message. Also in an email, the headline would probably be more adequately described as the subject line, but it's the first thing that you read whenever you're coming across some new source of content. Like I said, whether it's a blog post, whether it's a sales letter, a sales page, or an email, it's the very first thing. The headline is basically the ad for the rest of the ad. It's the thing that gets you to buy in to continue reading the rest of what they're going to try and get you to buy into. And the headline, it's been said that the headline is like it has 80% of the effectiveness of your ad. If people don't read the headline, they're not going to read the rest of the ad. So you really have to nail it with the headline. And so I'm going to go over a couple of rules that I have for whenever I write a headline. Number one, I want to make sure that my headline is attention grabbing. It needs to stop them in the middle of whatever they're doing and say, hey, pay attention to me. Hey, you need to pay attention to what I've got going on over here. And there's a couple ways of doing that. First and foremost, you need to make sure that it's clear, it's direct. It tells them exactly what the value proposition of whatever you're about to tell them is. So none of these clever headlines. A lot of times I see people write headlines either for their sales messages or their blog posts or their podcast episode titles, where it's like a really clever, witty, it makes a lot of sense to the person writing it, but it makes absolutely no sense to the person reading it. And when they look at it, they have no idea what you're trying to convey. And those kind of headlines are horrible because you've only got that one chance. Like I said, 8 out of 10 people will only read the headline. And if the headline doesn't grab them, they won't read anything else. So if the headline is witty, doesn't have any relevance to what's going to be conveyed in the rest of the message, doesn't grab the attention and explain to them exactly what they're going to get for reading, then the headline it's not doing its job. And so avoid trying to be witty with headlines. Avoid trying to be clever with headlines. That is not the place to be witty or clever in the headline. Also, a lot of times, like a good headline makes a promise. It grabs your attention and it makes a promise. It says, if you read this headline, you'll be able to avoid these 5 things, or you'll be able to accomplish this one thing in 3 simple steps without having to do the hard thing usually associated with it. A good headline usually makes a promise to the reader. If you give me your attention, I'm going to deliver this particular result to you. So maybe it's you want to be informed about something. You want to be educated on how to accomplish something. You want to know what service or product can help you achieve whatever it is that you're trying to achieve. The headline needs to speak to that and let you know. It's kind of like you're in a crowd full of all this noise, all these different Facebook status updates, or all these different articles in this newspaper or magazine, or all this different stuff that's going on the TV show. The headline needs to grab you in the middle of all that noise and say, you, you right there. I have something specifically for you, and I need you to pay attention to me so that you can get that. That's what your headline needs to do. It needs to be attention grabbing. It needs to be clear, concise, not clever. It's great if it can make a promise, and it's even better if it can evoke curiosity. If it can grab their attention and make them say, hey, I wonder what they're talking about, or how can they help me avoid this problem? Or what is that one simple trick that can help me melt off belly fat? If it can evoke their curiosity, if it can make a promise, if it can grab their attention, that's perfect. That's exactly what you want your headlines to do. Now, not everything needs a headline. I think the two greatest sales messages ever written, one of them was by Gary Halbert, and it's famously known now as the Halbert letter. It was basically a letter that he sent out to different people saying, hey, we came across a family plaque for your last name, and we wanted to let you know about it. It was a very persuasive letter. It was their own business. They were trying to sell these different plaques to different families. And the letter that he sent out didn't have a headline on it. It wasn't written like an ad. It was written like a letter. Hey, we just came across this directory. We found your name in it. We wanted to know if you wanted us to make this. And it was just addressed to the person, whoever's last name it was, Dear Mr. Frazier or Dear Mrs. Frazier or whatever the case may be. So that one didn't even have a headline, but it did speak directly to the person reading it. Also, the Wall Street Journal has one of the most effective controls. A control is basically the piece of sales copy that you run test pieces against, and whichever one does the better or does better out of the two, that one stays as the control. The Wall Street Journal has had a control that is used to sell subscriptions of the Wall Street Journal that's been in circulation for years and years and years, and nobody's ever beat it. And their advertisement doesn't have a headline either. It just says, Dear Reader. That's it. That's the headline, is Dear Reader. But again, it speaks directly to the person reading. It lets the person know this is directly for you. Even Dear Reader, that's kind of a little bit vague. But so the headline's important, but if you know the rules well enough, you can also know how to break the rules and still be effective. So that's just a little kind of backtracking or flip-flopping that I wanted to add onto the subject of headlines. So after headlines, I'm just going to talk about some of the overall structure of writing that I see people just mess up all the time. So first of all, avoid $10 words. The average reader out there reads at like the fifth grade level. The average American reads at a fifth grade level. And most people, when they write blogs, when they write sales messages, they want to sound smart and hoity-toity and educated. And especially like blog posts and Facebook updates. I see it so frequently. Sales messages too, where people just lay on all these intelligent words. They want to make themselves seem so intellectually superior so that everybody knows that this is a smart, trustworthy person. People don't want to be spoken down to, first of all. And when you use $10 words, when you use Harvard and Yale graduate letter or graduate level words, people feel like you're speaking down to them. And the average person out there feels like they can't connect with you. And in order to keep somebody reading, they need to be able to feel like they're connected to you. Whether this is a sales piece or a Facebook update or a blog post, if the person feels like you're on a totally different communications level with them and they start to get that impression the very first paragraph into your piece of writing, they're not going to finish. And with sales copy, you want them to get to that end, to the end of that message, but anything that you're writing, what's the point of writing anything at all if it's not to get people to get all the way to the end of your writing? Usually the point that you want to emphasize, usually the action that you want them to take, is going to be at the end of the piece of content. And if you turn them off in the first paragraph, if you speak down to them because you're using $10 words because you want to feel superior to them, or you want to show off how smart you are to them, and they feel disconnected, unable to relate to you, they're not going to get to the end of your writing. And what's the point of writing anything if your reader's not going to get to the end of it? You're just wasting your time. So avoid, at all costs, avoid $10 words. Also, use single idea sentences. Don't try and have compound sentences that run on and run on and have 50 different ideas all explained in one sentence. That is such a pain in the ass to read. And you're just being obnoxious. People don't want to read. By the time they get to the end of the sentence, they want to still remember the point you were trying to make at the beginning of the sentence. And if you've made 5 points by the time they get to the end of the sentence, you've lost them. If they can't remember, or if the ending of the sentence doesn't reemphasize the beginning point of the sentence, you've lost them. And so many people try to cram so many ideas into one sentence. Just break the sentences apart. If you find that your sentences are having too many ideas conveyed in one sentence, just figure out ways to break those sentences apart, and you'll be a lot better off for it. Also, short paragraphs, short little bite-sized paragraphs. I recommend, a lot of times, my paragraphs are 1 or 2 sentences long, especially the very first, the hook, the very first paragraph of any piece of my writing is usually 1 sentence long, because that first sentence is like a sample. If you give them a whole mouthful or a whole pizza to eat in the first bite, they're just going to turn away. They're not going to do it. But if you just say, hey, here's a sample of what you're going to get if you continue reading this, and you give them a little bite-sized nugget to chew on, and they get to taste it, and they get to say, yeah, this is definitely something I want to taste a little bit more of. You're a lot better than trying to shove the whole pizza down their throat in the first bite. It's the same thing with your writing. Your very first paragraph, your hook, needs to be 1 sentence long, maybe 2 sentences long, but I would never go longer than that. And even your follow-up paragraph needs to be short as well, because it's like you just got the tip in there, and you got to slowly work the rest in, because otherwise you're going to start to split the sides of their orifice, and you don't want to do that. You want to be gentle and nudge it in just a little bit at a time. All right. Also, I would say throughout the whole thing, make all of your paragraphs no longer than 4 or 5 lines long. I don't know if you're familiar with the term TLDR, teal deer, too long, didn't read, or too long, don't read, as some people say. It's the average comment, or the common comment, that gets applied to just big walls of text. Nobody wants to see a big wall of text. That's so hard on your eyes. You lose track of where you're at while you're reading it. It's intimidating. It's like walking into a house where the garbage needs to be taken out. There's a stack full of dishes. There's a stack full of mail on the table. There's a bunch of laundry. You need to vacuum. You need to dust. And everything hits you all at once, and you just get overwhelmed. And you say, fuck this, I'm going to play some Xbox. That's what it's like when your writing is just big, giant paragraphs, big, giant blocks of text. The person scrolling through their Facebook feed, or scrolling through their email inbox, or flipping through the advertisements in the magazine, they look at that big, giant wall of text and they say, fuck this, I'm flipping to the next post. I'm scrolling to the next post. I'm flipping to the next page. I'm opening the next email. And that's the worst thing that you could possibly have happen to your writing, is somebody look at it and without even giving it a second glance say, I'm not reading this because it's too long and I didn't read. So break up your paragraphs into small bite-sized pieces throughout the whole piece of copy. 4 or 5 sentences, or 4 or 5 lines long. That white space is great. You need white space in between blocks of text, small blocks of text. It makes it easier. It says, I can consume this 4 or 5 sentences. I can consume this 1 sentence, these 2 sentences. I can consume these little blocks 1 block at a time. It makes it a lot easier to get from the top of your message all the way to the bottom of your message. But if it's just one giant block of text or multiple giant blocks of text, good luck getting anybody to the bottom of that. All right, man, I feel a little bit preachy. also, one of the best things in, and this works for blog posts as well as sales letters, is bullet points. Bullet points where you can just take little ideas, little nuggets or little benefits and break them down into super easy to consume single sentence bullet points. It's so much better. People will skim. People that are skimming through, when they see bullet points, they'll stop skimming and they'll read those bullet points. Even if they don't read anything else, if they see those little bullet points as they're going through and they stop and see those bullet points, you get them to stop. They're going to start reading. And if those bullet points are intriguing to them or if they're valuable to them, they'll go back up and they'll start reading again to get back down to those bullet points. So bullet points are great because they're easy to consume. They're small, they're bite size, a lot of white space for the eyes to be able to relax and bring in just a little bit at a time. So bullet points are also a great way to keep your copy short and in bite-sized chunks. All right, so like I said, that's just the tip. If you want to experience the entire deep dive, if you're listening on Truth Frequency Radio Network, you're going to need to go over to Nathan Fraser Show and download the rest of this episode. It is episode 75. What is copywriting? And if you're listening to the podcast episode or if you're listening on LRN.FM or UCY.TV, it's going to be right on the other side of this commercial break. So stick around. Don't go anywhere. NathanFraserShow.com is the website. We'll be right back with the continuation of this episode, What is Copywriting?
Free minds, free markets, free people.
Hey, I've got a real quick question for you. Are your advertising efforts not getting the response you expected? Would you like them to perform better? If so, I've got something that'll help you out. Before you spend another dime on advertising, head on over to my website and download your free copywriting consumer awareness guide. In it, you'll discover 4 red flags that can help you avoid hiring a bad copywriter, 9 foundational elements that every good sales message should include, 3 questions you must ask before you spend a penny on sales copy, 4 secret editing tricks that'll drive people to keep reading your ads, and a whole lot more. Want to get the most out of your advertising budget? Head on over to freemarketsquad.com/copyguide and claim your free copywriting consumers awareness guide today.
Let me ask you something. Haven't you ever been tempted to just break the rules and finally
get back at my big faceless corporate bosses for making me feel so small and insignificant?
Look at this, Marge. $58 and all of it profit. I'm the smartest businessman in the world.
Government can print money, but it's the entrepreneurs who really make the money.
Why don't you guys just make your cars cleaner and nicer and try to be better to your customers so that you can compete with Handy Car's popularity in the marketplace?
Shut up and take my money.
All right. Benefit driven. This is one of the biggest mistakes people make when they're, and this one applies strictly to sales messages, but actually it kind of applies to other conversation as well. So I'm going to go ahead and maybe cover it from both angles. I didn't think that I was going to, but I am. So many people, when they're trying to write a sales letter for something, they want to present the logic. They want to present the features. They want to say, this is a pencil. This pencil is made out of this type of grain of wood, and it has this type of lead, or it has this type of material that's not lead, so you don't have to worry about getting lead poisoning. It's got a rubber eraser. It's got this little metal thing that holds the rubber eraser to the pencil. There's 8 of them in a pack. That's the way that they try to sell the pencils. Nobody cares about that, though. That's selling the features and not selling the benefits. Now, the way that you can tell what the feature is versus the benefit is, feature is that the pencil is wood. Benefit is the pencil is easy to sharpen because it's made of wood. Feature is The pencil has a thin sliver of lead throughout it. Benefit is you can jot down notes with that sliver of lead. A feature is there's a piece of rubber at the end of the pencil. Benefit is you can erase your mistakes. And even on a deeper level benefits, those are just like the cursory level benefits. Deeper level benefits of a pencil are it's easy to carry. You can always have one in your pocket. If you're somebody like me who needs to take notes really quick, it's easier than opening your application on your phone and searching for Evernote and searching for the folder. You can just make a jot down your idea real quick on a piece of paper, fold it in your pocket, and have it there for later. If even deeper level benefit, if you're a copywriter like me and you have an idea while you're not able to get to your phone, you can jot that idea down and you won't lose it. And that might end up being a $1 million idea. So the benefits of a pencil go far beyond just being able to write down and erase stuff. Depending on who your target market is, the benefits of that pencil might be this can help you not lose and help you capture $1 million ideas. So you really need to know who it is that you're speaking to and what those deeper level benefits are. And another example of features versus benefits would be like if you're selling a house. Well, you can say, well, this house has 4 walls and a roof and a backyard. That's selling the house. That's selling the features. If you want to really sell the house, though, you say this can be a home. This can be where you raise your children. This backyard can be where you throw your family picnics and your barbecues, and you can invite the neighbors over. That's selling the benefits. The features would be it has a 2-car garage. The benefits would be you can turn this into a man cave. The features would be it has a dishwasher. The benefit can be you don't have to spend all of your time over the sink washing dishes. So a lot of people want to sell the features. The real way to sell something is to sell the benefits. And this is something... real quick, before I get into that, this is something that you can see when you go to the store. If you look at anything that's a well-selling or a good high-selling item, just walk down the toy department or walk down the sporting goods department of your typical, not grocery store, but like Walmart or Target or something like that. Walk down the aisles and you'll see on the packaging, on the front of the package, it's the benefit. It's the kid having fun with the toy. It's the action. It's the adventure. It's the imaginary playtime with the little girls playing with their Barbie dolls. It's the benefit that's laid out on the front of the package. It's the person with the 6-pack abs doing the workout on the yoga mat. It's the benefit that you get that's detailed on the front of the package. And then on the back is all of the features, all of the details, all of the takes AA batteries or made out of high grade rubber or I haven't bought in toys in so long, so I don't know all the different features that are laid out on the back of a toy package, but you get my drift. The benefits are what they sell, and then the features are explained on the back because people make decisions emotionally. And then they look for logical reasons to back up those decisions. But so many people, when it comes to selling their service or their product, they want to explain the features. They want to explain the logical reason why you should buy something. And they forget to explain what it actually means to them. They want to tell you everything that their business does, everything that comes with the toy or comes with the workout equipment, but they forget to tell you what you really care about, which is what benefits these will bring to you and to your life. And same thing with activism. A lot of people in activism want to argue the logics, especially when it comes to like Austrian economics or the libertarian type of argument debating as far as trying to get the ideas of liberty out there. We want to always argue the logical side. Well, if you understand economics, you'll understand this, 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 and this. But people don't make their decisions based off of logic. They make their decisions based off of emotion. And if you look at who does really well at that, It's the Democrats and the Republicans. They're always, well, what about the children? Or what about the terrorists? Or what about the poor minorities? It's always emotional appeals. It's appeals to fear. It's appeals to selfishness. It's appeals to pity. It's appeals to emotions. And they rarely back them up with logic. But us in the liberty community, we have a tendency to make appeals to logic, and then we wonder why we're not converting people as quickly as the big two parties are. It's because those two parties understand that people make their decisions based off of emotions and then back up those decisions if there is any logic to help them do so. Also, another thing that I see people do a lot in sales copy and probably in activism as well, and definitely in everyday conversations, is always thinking of what's going on from their own point of view. When you go to a sales letter for somebody, it's, we've been in business for this long. We establish our business by doing this. Our customer service is number one. We do this. We've been ranked this. We've won this award. Us. Me. I. Nobody cares about that. They're not there reading your sales letter because they want to hear about you. They're there reading your sales letter because they want to hear about them. They've got a problem. They've got a desire. They've got something that they want. And they don't care about you. So don't make your sales message about you. And this is a great thing for regular everyday conversation as well. Seek first to understand, then to be understood. That doesn't mean you can't say anything about yourself, but you need to first let the other person know that you understand them. Because if you start a conversation with them and all you do is talk about what your wants are, what your achievements are, what's so awesome about you, they're not going to feel like you understand them. And if they don't feel like you understand them, then why should they take the time to understand you? And if they don't take the time to understand you, how well are you going to be able to communicate to them what it is that you want to provide for them, whether it's an improvement of their life by an enriching conversation, or if it's improving their life by helping them solve a problem, or if it's improving their life by helping them achieve something by buying your service, buying your product. If you don't first let them know that you understand them, if you don't make your copy about first addressing their needs, their fears, their wants, their desires, letting them know that you understand them, they're not going to care about all of your list of achievements and voted number one in the city for 3 years in a row. And here's our stickers proving that we're part of the Better Business Bureau. And we were established when my great grandpappy built it, but they don't care about any of that until you let them know that you care about them, that you understand them. So your sales copy needs to have words like you and your and you'll. A lot, not you'll like a Yuletide, but you'll like Y-O-U apostrophe L-L. You should appear in your sales copy. The word you should appear in your sales copy way more frequently than I or we. And if you go through almost every sales paper or every sales letter written by second class or low-class jackass sales copywriters, as Ben Settle would call them, if you go through sales copy written by those people, and probably by just beginners, it doesn't mean you're a jackass. It just means that you don't know what you're doing. Almost always the sales message is all about how awesome we are. But just imagine if you walked into a party and somebody came up to you and started saying, guess how awesome I am. Guess how many girls I had sex with last week. Guess what kind of a car I drive. Guess how much money I make. How engaging or how enthusiastic would you be to continue talking to that person? Or how likely would you be instead to say, you know what, I've got to go, actually. I see a friend over there. It was nice to meet you, and peace out. And in a sales message, it's the same thing. If all you do is talk about yourself, they're not going to make it to the end of your sales message. So keep that in mind. All right. Next, we've got overcoming objections. Now, this is something definitely in activism that you have to do. And most people do a very good job of this. Most people have heard the objections. They've got their own talking points that they can counter their objections to. But specifically, I want to talk about sales copy and how to overcome objections, or things that you need to understand when it comes to overcoming objections in sales copy. So first of all, you have to address skepticism, because anybody reading your sales page on the internet, anybody reading your email that you're trying to sell them something in your email, anybody, even in an everyday conversation, people are skeptical of you, especially if they don't know you, if it's the first time that they've met you, if it's the first time they've come across your sales page, if it's the first time that they've opened up one of your emails, they don't know you, they don't trust you. They've been burned in the past by other marketers or other friends, other boyfriends, other girlfriends, other spouses, other salespeople. So you're going into this with a bunch of skepticism. They're automatically skeptical. They've been taught not to trust salespeople. They've been taught not to trust other people out there. I mean, the media, all it does is teach you that you can't trust other people. So anybody that you're engaging in any kind of conversation, especially a sales conversation, they're going to be skeptical. They're going to come to the conversation with a bunch of baggage, a bunch of skepticism. And typically, the best way that I found to address that skepticism is just to straight up address it. Don't beat around the bush. Don't try to hide it. Don't try to avoid talking about the things that they might be skeptical. Just come out flat out and say, yeah, you're probably skeptical about this. You've probably had to deal with this in the past. I know that when I've been trying to deal with this, I've had to deal with this in the past. I understand why you would be skeptical. And that's something that I usually do is if it's the positive, if it's you want to get this goal, or you want to avoid this pain, or you want to be able to do this or be able to get that. If it's a positive thing, I'll usually use the you. On the rare exception where I talk about myself, it's usually for the negative. So instead of putting the blame on them, instead of bringing up those negative associations, I'll put those negative associations on myself. I say, hey, I remember when I was struggling with my weight, or I remember when I was struggling to write a sales page, or I remember when my podcast wouldn't get more than 2 downloads an episode. If it's a pain point, if it's something that they're skeptical, yeah, I'd love to buy your podcasting solution, but what if I only get 2 listens? Or what if I don't know how to build a website? Then I'm going to take that on myself. I'm going to say, I remember, but, and use that word but, because by simply addressing it and then saying but, and then putting the counterpoint there, that one simple 3-letter word but can make a world of difference, because you address their concern, you say but, and then you lay out your point. You make them feel like they're understood. You say, but, and then you let them understand where you're coming from. That simple 3-letter word, but, can make all the difference in the world. And the other word is because. This also can help you overcome skepticism, because if they're looking at your sales message and they're like, well, why are these computers so cheap? And your sales message says, your sales message says, man, not doing the best on this choice conversation right here. Your sales message says, we've got 16 computers for sale that are on sale 80% off this weekend only. And somebody says, well, why would they be on sale for that cheap? 80% off? That's insane. Did they fall off the back of a truck? Are they stolen? Am I going to have the police knock at my door? You follow up that sentence because you know they're going to be skeptical. 80% off a computer? That's insane. You follow it up with, because we just got a new inventory and we need to clear out the old inventory. So in order to make room for the new stuff, we have to get rid of this old stuff. That's why we're cutting an 80% discount on these computers. You address their skepticism, you add the word because, and then you pivot and let them know what it is or why it is. Those two words, because or but, can go just go miles as far as addressing people's skepticism and overcoming their objections. Next is giving people a villain to blame, giving them a common villain to blame. And this is something that in regular everyday activism. Everybody's got, especially if you're like me, I'm kind of an abolitionist. I don't believe in the state. I don't believe the state is a healthy aspect of society. I would prefer that we lived in a society where coercive central planning wasn't forced upon all of the people in a geographic location. So I'm not a big fan of the state. Just go ahead and lay that out there. And that's a very hard idea to sell to people. But see how I did that? I understand that you're skeptical, but it's actually easy to sell to people if you can find a common villain that you share. And everybody has at least one villain. Everybody's got, some people have had bad experiences with the school system. And so they understand how horrible the public government state-ran schools are. Some people have had experiences with the doctor and the vaccines, and they had their kid get autism, or they had their girlfriend develop a skin rash that never went away directly after getting a vaccine. Some people have had bad experiences with their uncle owned a farm, and the GM, the genetically modified crops cross-pollinated onto his farm, and he got sued by Monsanto, and they had to shut down his farm. And so they've got that, they may not agree with you on everything, but they've got that one or two, they've got those one or two points where you find that common ground, you find that common villain, and you help them throw stones at that common villain, and that gets them on your side. And then once you've got that foot in the door, you can help, you can use that as a wedge to help open up their eyes to other things that they might have been hesitant, they might have fought back against you on or completely ignored you about 15 minutes before. But now that you found that common villain, they feel like you're on their side. You're helping them throw stones at that common villain. Now they're a lot more likely to listen to you when you say, hey, that villain is definitely legitimate, but did you know about these other villains? Or did you know about this particular solution? And then sales copy, that's what it's all about. It's about trying to get them to a solution. So you don't want to just put up a villain and throw rocks and say, yeah, you're the victim and poor picked on you and blah, 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 and let's all have a pity party for you. That's where their mind might be at, but you need to take them from that victimhood mentality into a mentality of victory, of victoriousness. Is that a word? I'm a copywriter. I should know. But you want to take them from that victimhood mentality to a mentality of victory. And the only way to do it is to first address the fact that you do have a villain in common. So if you're selling weight loss supplements, hopefully they work. I don't ever recommend selling stuff that doesn't actually work. Again, manipulation versus persuasion. But if you've got something that will help people lose weight, or if you've got an exercise program that'll help people lose weight, address the common villain that they have in the weight loss industry. It might be the food companies. Yeah, the food companies just pump everything full of sugar. They pump everything full of corn. Corn's a filler food. Sugar is causing diabetes and obesity and all kinds of other health risks. And the sugar lobby, the companies have the sugar lobby. They're out there almost as bad as the nicotine lobbies were back in the 70s and 80s. And it's not your fault. It's their fault. They're the villain. And now that they're not blaming themselves, now that they're not saying, well, it's just genetics, I'm just going to be fat forever, or, oh, I've tried everything and nothing works for me, I'm just not able to do it. You give them a villain. You say, no, dude, it's not your fault. It's the sugar company's fault. It's the corn industry's fault. You know how much subsidies go into corn? And corn is just filler food. It doesn't even have hardly any nutritional value at all. They give corn to cows just to get them fat. Of course you're fat, because everything in your diet has corn subsidies and corn meal and corn syrup, and you give them a villain to blame. And once they've got that villain to blame and you help them throw some rocks at them, you say, but you know, there is, I mean, it's throwing rocks at the corn company or the sugar company. That's great. That's fun and all, but you know, there is something you can do. And actually I am feeling really great right now because I found this diet that doesn't have all the corn and doesn't have all the sugar. And I eat these foods instead. They're delicious. And they're part of this program. I eat these foods. I do this exercise every morning. It's like 15 minutes in the morning and I feel a lot healthier. And we do have this common enemy, but instead of just throwing rocks at this villain, why don't you try this out? I bet you could probably get the same results that I've been able to get. And in that moment, all of a sudden, they stop feeling sorry for themselves. They stop feeling like there's nothing that they can do. You've helped them identify the villain, and you've helped them identify the solution, and you've brought them to the point where they're able to make a decision that can actually benefit their life. And if you do that in political activism, if you're just like, oh, the Bilderberg Group and the Federal Reserve and the Council on Foreign Relations and the MK Ultras and the chemtrails, if all you do is just dump on villain after villain after villain after villain, people are like, look, dude, listen here, Chicken Little. I'm sick of hearing about this, about how the sky's going to fall. Do you got a fucking umbrella for me? And if not, you're not going to get very far with them. But if you're like, yeah, actually, you know, I've been ranting and raving about the Federal Reserve. Have you heard about Bitcoin, though? Oh my God, Bitcoin, you got to hear about Bitcoin. Bam, you got somebody who's bought into Bitcoin. You're talking about whatever the case may be, the heavy metals and the fluoride in the water. Okay, I've identified the villain. We've thrown a bunch of rocks. Do you have something that you can help me solve this problem with? Well, actually, I've got this water filter. Boom. Okay, how do I get that water filter? I feel like Alex Jones over here. But the point is, don't just throw rocks at the villains. Have a solution. Don't just talk about how the sky's going to fall. Have some solutions available, and those people will buy into those solutions a lot more easily than if you just walk up to them and said, hey, buy my water filter. Hey, buy some Bitcoin. No, I don't know you. I don't trust you. I don't feel like you understand me. And no, I'm not going to buy your Bitcoin. No, I'm not going to buy your water filter. See how that works? All right. No, I'm not going to buy into your activism. No, I'm not going to go protest the Federal Reserve with you. All right. Identify the villain. Give them a solution. Next, you got to explain why this time will be different. In your sales copy, you got to explain. Yeah, I was there with you. I failed multiple times. The reason why this time I didn't fail is because this exercise routine is easy. You do it in the morning before, you don't do it at the end of the day. You don't do it when you're exhausted. You do it first thing in the morning. You get your exercising done before you're even out the door. You have more exercise, more blood, more oxygen pumping through your blood than most people do all day long. And you've got it done in your first 15 minutes of your day. Or it's different because you don't even have to get out of bed. You just have to do these leg stretches and these curls, and you've got your ab workout and your lower body workout and your upper body workout done for the day. Or it's easier because instead of having to buy Jenny Craig food, which is expensive and whatever, all you have to do is just cut out these two things out of your diet. And it's really, it's kind of difficult, but here's this simple cookbook that gives you tons of different ingredients and tons of different recipes for all these different meals. They're easy. They're less expensive than Jenny Craig. And they're not processed food like Jenny Craig is. Please don't sue me, Jenny Craig. is that even a business anymore? I don't know. Maybe I'm showing my age. But you give them a reason why this is different. Same thing with like Bitcoin. Your dollars are losing value. And you put money into a savings account, and the amount of interest that it's bared doesn't even cover the amount of inflation that the dollars occurred or had occur to it. Here's a better way to save. And the reason why this is better is because if you look at the history, Bitcoin is actually deflationary, and you put money into Bitcoin and after a year, it's actually worth a lot more than it would be if you just put it in a cash investment or a CD or something like that. So you show why your solution is different. And that helps overcome the objection of, yeah, I've tried to fix this before, but I've never been able to fix it. Well, that's because you didn't try the solution that has this one difference, and this one difference will make all of the difference. And then the last thing is to have a risk reversal. This is where people really get hesitant. Have a guarantee. Have some sort of, if it doesn't work for you, we'll give you back your money, or you don't even have to pay at first. You get it for 30 days. If you don't like it, you don't even have to pay. Just cancel it at any time. Let them know, because taking on the risk of trying something that they haven't tested, that they don't have good friends that are recommending to them, that they haven't seen on their television, telling them that it's a trusted product, whatever the situation is, wherever they get their trust from, it's probably not going to come from your sales letters. They're going to feel like the risk is still there on them. If they buy it and it doesn't work, they're the ones that's out of the money. They're the ones taking on the risk. You need to reverse that risk in any way that you can. That's the one final way to overcome. If somebody's sitting on the fence and they've only got that one last objection, I feel like I'm taking too much risk on, you got to figure out a way to reverse that risk for them and let them know, you know what? If you're not fully satisfied within 30 days, I'll refund your money. And people might say, well, I can't afford to refund everybody's money, or I can't afford to do a double your money back guarantee, or I can't afford to guarantee it for 6 months or whatever the case may be. But the fact is if you're selling anything, if you sell something and somebody's not satisfied with your product or your service, do you really want to keep their money? If they're complaining about it and they're saying, I feel like you ripped me off. Are you the type of person that would really keep their money? Or would you more than likely, every business owner that I've ever done business with that I've asked this question to, if you did this service, you did everything you possibly could, and the person legitimately was not satisfied with it, legitimately didn't feel like you fulfilled your end of the bargain, do you really want to keep that money? Every single one of them says, well, no, I would definitely give them their money back. If they didn't feel like they got what they paid for, I don't want to be the guy that kept that money. That I wouldn't feel right about that at all. I'd definitely give them their money back. Well, make that part of your sales message then. Let them know. If you're going to give them their money back, if they're not satisfied and you're not putting it in your sales message because you're afraid to tell them, you're going to do it anyways. You might as well make it part of your sales message. That way you're helping reverse the risk. Now the risk goes from them, the buyer, onto you, the seller, and they feel a lot more comfortable. And maybe 1 out of 10 people will ask for their money back. Maybe 1 out of 100 people will ask for their money back. But out of those 10 or out of those 100 people, you're going to get 8 or maybe even 80 buyers that wouldn't have bought without being able to see that they could get their money back if they weren't satisfied, without being able to see that you were willing to take on the risk rather than putting all the risk on them. And if you're not confident to take on the risk of saying, look, if this doesn't work for you, will take full responsibility. If you don't believe in your product enough to take the risk off of their shoulders and put it on your own shoulders, why should they believe in your product or service? So if you're willing to give people their money back, if they're not satisfied, make that part of your sales message. Let them know, look, your last objection is that you're not wanting to take on all the risk. Let us take all the risk for you. All right. This is the thing that everybody misses. It's funny that I almost forgot to cover this, because this is something that people just always forget to cover in their sales message. I went to I'm not going to say which site, but a site for a very well-known company today, because I'm searching around for a particular application for our business. And I was comparing the different services, and one of the most well-known, I got to the end of their sales letter. It had all of these things that I've talked about so far. And then at the end of the sales letter, no call to action. It had testimonials at the end of the sales letter and didn't tell me what to do next. You have to have a call to action, whether it's a blog post, a Facebook post. Yeah, you don't have to have them in a Facebook post, but it helps. What's the point of writing if you're not trying to get somebody to do something? Even if it's just think about this and weigh it against what you already believe, all the way up to click here to buy now or click here for more information. Whatever it is that you want them to do at the end of reading your content, you need to tell them. And I got to the bottom of the sales page and there was nothing for me to do. It was a very compelling sales page. I'm still going to go with this service because I compared it to all the other ones and it was the best one. But the huge foobar at the end of their sales page, they didn't have any kind of call to action. They didn't tell me what to do next. And that's so horrible. If you've taken somebody on this journey, if they've made it all the way to the end of your sales letter, or all the way to the end of your blog post, or all the way to the end of your Facebook post or your email message, and you don't tell them what to do next, you just put all that work into creating all of that for nothing. Because now they say, oh, I guess he doesn't want me to do anything. Click, delete, click, page back, scroll on past. And what was the point of even just a brand to get your name out there? That might work for Coca-Cola and McDonald's, but that does not work for the small business owner out there. You need to call them to action. You need to tell them explicitly, lay it out, what you want them to do next when they get to the end of your message. If it's an activism message and you're like, this is how bad the Federal Reserve is, this is what they've done, this is how it's hurt your wallet, this is how it's hurt your savings, this is what it's going to do to your children, this is what all of this debt is going to do to your grandchildren, and that's the end of my message. Well, that was great. You built me up. You gave me all this information. You made me feel all empowered, like I could do something. And then you didn't tell me what I could do. How horrible of a sales piece is that? Tell me what to do. Meet us at the Federal Reserve on January 23rd. Bring your picket signs. We're going to make a stink. Tell me what to do. Don't give me all this information about how your product or service can make my life better or help me avoid some catastrophic tragedy. And then I get to the end of the sales message and it says, hi, I'm Jane. I really enjoyed this product. Hi, I'm Bill. I really enjoyed this product. All right, that's the end. Tell me what to do. Lay it out. Make it explicit. Call me to action. Don't leave it up to me to figure out, because I'm on your website. I don't know your website very well. I don't know where the sales page is at. I don't know where to go next. I got to the bottom of the page and I had to go and search to find out what to do next. You don't ever want to leave your reader in that situation, because chances are if they can't figure out what to do next, if you don't explicitly tell them what to do next, they're not going to do anything next. So if you want them to do something, tell them what it is that you want them to do. And don't back off. Don't sell from the hill. Don't backpedal. Don't use words like, well, if you would like to get this solution, go ahead and click here now. Or we're pretty confident that this might be able to solve your problem, and if you want to take that risk, go ahead and click here now. Or, yeah, we're pretty sure that this probably will solve your problem. Go ahead and buy it for $13. Don't sell from the hill. Don't lose your confidence. If you had confidence throughout the whole sales letter and then you lose confidence at that very last point and you start using words like probably or maybe or if you'd like or if you feel like it, if you lose that confidence, you start selling from the hill at the very end of the sales letter, all of that momentum that you built up through that sales letter just completely plummets and dies at the very end. So you need to remain strong. You need to sell strong all the way to the very end. And make it easy for people to say yes. Like I said, in that particular on that particular sales page, they did not make it easy for me. They didn't have a click here to buy. They didn't have a click here for more information. They made it very difficult. I had to scroll all the way back up to the top of the page, find the prices tab, and then click on that. And if I was in a hurry, if I wasn't so intent on solving this problem, I probably would have just not done that. I probably would have just been like, okay, well, that was interesting, but they didn't tell me what I needed to do next, so I'm going on to the next website. Make it easy. Don't make them fill out 15 pages to be able to buy. That's why like Amazon and all these different websites now have one-click pay. You want to make it as easy as possible for them to say yes, and everything that you do that makes it more difficult, every extra step, every piece of confusing conversational copy at the end that you put in there, everything that makes it confusing is going to make it harder for them to say yes. So you want to be very clear and concise. Tell them exactly what you want them to do. Tell them exactly what they're going to get. Reestablish what it is that they're going to get by now, and you're going to get this, 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 and this. And remember, don't forget, if you buy within the next hour, you'll also get this. You'll be able to solve this problem. You'll be able to get this sexy six-pack of abs or nice round gluteus maximus, whatever the case may be. Remind them what it is that they get. Reemphasize the benefits that they're going to get for saying yes. Make it easy to say yes. Tell them to say yes. Tell them how to say yes. And do it with confidence. And at that point, if it's the right product and if it's the right person, more often than not, probably, more often than not, they are going to say yes, and you've made yourself a sale. And works in activism, works in blog posts, works in Facebook posts, absolutely works in sales messages. And hopefully you enjoyed this conversation, this one-way conversation. Hopefully you gained some benefit from it and you'll be able to take this knowledge and start playing around with it. Start toying around with it. When you do a Facebook post, start playing around with starting with one sentence for your first paragraph and keeping your paragraph shorter and keeping your sentences more concise and limited to one idea. If you write blog posts, try to use some of these. When you're writing a headline, try to make sure that the headline directly speaks to the need that the potential reader might be focusing or facing. Try when you're doing any kind of writing, or try when you're doing any kind of conversing, talking with your loved ones or your children. Try to first come at it from a point of understanding where they're at. Try to let them know. Ask them questions. Get where they're really at. Understand where they're really coming from. Focus whatever it is that you're trying to sell them on, instead of just laying out the logical reasons why they should go along with you. Look for the benefits. Look for how it benefits them if they go along with you. Look for how it's a win-win situation where they're not just bending to your will, they're actually benefiting. Try to implement these rules of sales copy into your everyday communications. And I guarantee you, 100% guarantee you, 100% money back guarantee that you will see a vast improvement in the quality of your conversations, and you will be able to have more choice conversations. All right, Free Market Squad, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Like I said, that was cut from an episode of Choice Conversations, Chris Stefanik's podcast. You want to listen to more episodes of that, head on over to choiceconversations.com. And if you want to get more information on what I do as a copywriter, if I can help your business get more sales, head on over to freemarketsquad.com. All right, I am out of here. Faith in each other, not in authority. Be your own boss. Hashtag BYO boss. Deuces.
Free minds, free markets, free people.